Hello, everybody. This is Aaron with the Golden Mean. This is my first podcast back with a family of mine called Married to Change Radio Revamped. It's been almost 2 years since I've done a podcast with this group of individuals. I started out with them doing blog talk. Then I kind of ventured off on my own. And I decided, you know what? They're family. Let me come back and bring my message to their platform. And I can also alternate between platforms. And, you know, hopefully gain some of their followers, they gain some of mine, and we all gain some knowledge. Today's podcast is about today's youth. I'm going to start off with what sparked this. I was on a Facebook group from my local community, and there was all of these people complaining about the younger kids between the ages of 10 and 14, egging vehicles and TPing houses for Halloween and for the holidays. And they were going off about, oh, these children need to be locked up. Their parents need to be fined and they need to be beaten. And I was thinking to myself, when I was younger, I egged a few houses and TP'd a few homes myself. It was kind of a rites of passage for developing relationships with your friends. Everyone has a dark side and a light side. Everybody has a devious side and a good side. Even the best kids can get caught up in mess. And it's normal childhood behavior. Then I looked at how society treats the youth and I realized something. Now I understand why the youth are so depressed. Everything is boxed in and they don't really have an outlet necessarily to express themselves. When I was a kid, we'd ride bicycles all day long. We had no cell phones, no pagers, no Fitbits, nothing to track us, no GPSs. Those things didn't even exist. When I was a kid, we still had some homes still had rotary phones. My grandmother had a rotary phone. And so as far as once you left the house on your bicycle with your friends, you were pretty much in the wind until you came home. So your parents had no clue what end of the neighborhood you'd be on, if you'd even be in the neighborhood. But there was no big worry about it. You know, it was like, oh, no, where is he at? You know, you could be gone from sundown to, I mean, from sunup to sundown. You know, we'd go out as early as 7 a.m. on a Saturday and come home right before the lights go out, you know. And so we could be out literally a whole 14 hours straight. Anywhere in the neighborhood or outside. I mean, we ride our bikes to whole other cities. We go to gorges, mountains, everywhere. And we went as a big group. And the way you found your friends was you saw where all the bikes were. And then you came up with an idea. Hey, y'all, let's go here. And then you kind of went. And through our journeys, you know, we did stupid stuff. We kicked over mailboxes and things like that. I mean, yeah, it was stupid. Yeah, it was. But it was part of expressing the little animalistic portion inside of every child. Every child has an animalistic portion within them. You cannot beat it, breed it, punish it out. Any child that is forced into too much structure eventually becomes destructive as they grow older. And I see this with a lot of friends that I have. I have a lot of friends who were raised in really strict households, especially my friends who were part of the Seventh-day Adventist households or the Jehovah's Witness households. And a lot of those guys, man, when they got away from home, they went buck wild. I mean, they did stuff that I was like, wow, you really gonna do that? I mean, these dudes snorted cocaine. They tried every type of drug that could go up your nose. They did orgies. I mean, they did stuff that was way off limits for me. And I was a pretty free child. I spent the end of my youth living with my grandmother and she had one rule. No, two rules. Don't get nobody pregnant. Don't go to jail. I had no curfew. I had no specific diet. All I had to do was stay out of trouble. So I can go and come as I please. And she gave me, I mean, extreme freedom. It was almost unheard of. But what it did was it allowed me to set personal rules for myself to keep me in line because I didn't want to go to jail and I didn't want to get anybody pregnant. And it taught me how to self-govern because I wasn't micromanaged. Then I look at the kids today. Here it is. You have grown adults screaming, they need to be locked up. And you want to lock up kids for egging cars. There's so many people incarcerated for felonious charges. The last thing you want to do is cage children. And then these are probably the same people because it's a suburb that I live in that are saying, oh, they got children in cages. But here it is. They're advocating caging children between the ages of 10 and 14 for throwing eggs at their home. I had my house egged twice when I lived in my old house. And you know what I did? Got up in the morning with my pressure sprayer and sprayed it off. Because eggs don't hurt anything. You just spray it off. I picked up the shells, threw it away, and that was that. The youth have senior ditch day, right? And they have senior prank, right? Where you know, you finish school. Like, for instance, our senior prank was I was class of 2002. So what we did was we took salt and we salted the grass of the school with the numbers 2002, and they didn't realize it till it worked its way in, and then there was a permanent burn mark of our grade. But the school actually left it there, which was pretty dope. But anyway, then we had Senior Ditch Day, and the teachers were like, "Don't you go to Senior Ditch Day?" And they all knew we were going anyway. And we even had some cool teachers like, "Hey, you can go ahead and go to your friends. I'll mark you here," you know, because they understood this was part of growing up. You know, every community has its rites of passage. You know, in the kid world, you know, when you're going to elementary school, it's "I dare you to do this" or tag, or, you know, and then in the middle school world, it's "I bet you can't do this." And then in the high school world, there's rites of passage. There's things that you do. There's things that you endure that kind of help you build fellowship with your fellow students. You know, now to the topic of bullying. When I was in school, you know, and this is one thing I think bullying can be healthy in a sense of it can be a lifelong lesson of solving conflicts personally. As I said, because I didn't have a curfew or any real restrictive rules, I learned to self-govern. And because I had a bully and I had no siblings that were my age to help me fight, I was very passive in my youth. I didn't like to fight. It wasn't that I couldn't fight. I just didn't want to. I didn't like getting hurt. I didn't want to get hit. It didn't feel good. And I felt like, why should I fight? Like, there's no need for this. But there was one particular bully. I won't say his last name, but I'll say his first name, Eddie. And one day I had just got a fresh haircut. I was having a bad day at school. I just got a failing grade on my math test. The teacher was talking about me repeating the class. I was frustrated. So I went to history class, and I put my head down on my desk. You know, I wrapped my arms around and put my head down. And as I was chilling, just waiting for the teacher to come in, Eddie took his hand, spit in it, draw his hand way back, and smacked the hell out of the back of my head until my forehead smacked the front of the desk. It was all bad. I jumped up, pissed off. And this is a dude that had been pushing me around, punking me and bullying me for almost the whole school year. And I had been tolerating it. But I had enough. I had jumped up. I took the history book that was on the side of my desk, and I beat the hell out of Eddie with that book. I mean, pages was ripping out. The cover came off. He was in the corner with his hands all huddled up screaming, "Please stop." I was beating the shit out of him with that book. I think the teachers were kind of satisfied that I did that because they all didn't really like how he would bully people either. But something awesome came out of that. When we were in the office, Eddie's parents came and my mom came, and me and Eddie had a talk, and we both agreed we would squash it. But me and him actually became real good friends. And the two of us, he stopped bullying, and nobody dared bully me because they saw what I did to Eddie. So it was like they were all still scared of him, but they were equally scared of me. But I wasn't a bully. And by him having a friend in me, he didn't feel the need to bully anymore. And so he stopped being a bully, and I stopped being bullied, and we became friends. And it became a mutually beneficial relationship. So right there, I learned how to defend and protect myself. And I learned how to resolve my own conflicts. I didn't go tell on them. I didn't go home and load up a gun and come back and try to shoot up the school. I didn't go home and try to commit suicide. I whooped his ass. I beat fire out of him with a book. And nowadays, for the act of fighting in school, children could be locked up for assault and given, you know, literally felony charges for a simple school fight. When I feel like school fights are also a rites of passage, especially for young males. I believe young males have this sense of superiority or this natural instinct for pecking order where, you know, they challenge people to kind of get you to rise to the occasion. If you don't rise, they press you until you either do or you fold. And I'm not a folder. And so eventually I rose to the occasion. And in that situation, it helped everybody. And I see that criminalizing this behavior is actually driving youth who are incapable of making rational decisions at their age, because they say that the mind of a male doesn't really fully develop until he's about 25. So here you are, you got a 15 or 14 year old kid who's 10 or 11 years from full development of rational thought, and you're going to give him a permanent mark on his life for a childhood situation. We need to stop treating these children like adults. They're not adults, even if they are big. And the problem is pop culture. Pop culture kind of makes eternal boyhood seem like manhood. Like all this thug culture, young thug, and you got a grown man calling himself the baby. You got Lil Wayne, you know, all these Lil Pump, Lil this, Lil that. You know, what it does is it gives the illusion that that children are adults. Because how do you distinguish DaBaby from any other young man? Or how do you distinguish Lil Wayne, who dresses and acts and even sounds like a young person, who's probably in his 40s right now, from a young rapper that's 15 or 16, you know? You kind of just group them all in together, and then the consequences just become blanket. Lil Wayne is more than capable of making rational decisions as an adult. If he chooses not to, then he's not choosing not to because of some sort of undevelopment of his brain. He's choosing not to because he's just being a defiant and disrespectful adult. And at that case, if he goes around picking fights or bullying people, he needs to go to jail. But somebody that's 13, 14, 15, they're just trying to find their standing in the world. I feel like as society becomes more uptight and people become more helicopter style parents, and we become more structure orientated, that we take away a lot of the magic of childhood and we take away a lot of the mischievousness. You had our great grandparents playing chicken, where they would literally jump on the top of a car and drive as fast as they can towards each other, and whoever swerves loses. What the hell kind of recklessness is that? But these are the same adults today bitching about kids throwing eggs, talking about it's reckless and disrespectful. You have people who would literally put flaming dog poop on doorsteps, play ding dong. They created these games, the ding dong ditch where you ring the doorbell and run. They literally pioneered these events, these senior ditch day. It's a tradition. Who started the tradition of senior ditch day? Who started the tradition of, you know, who started make out corner or make out mountain or those places, or who started the going to the drive-in movie and, you know, getting it on in the back seat? You know, the same people complain about youth doing it today. What would we say now if a group of youth played chicken in 2020? What would you say right now if you saw some teenagers on top of a car driving at each other full speed and whoever swerves loses? Man, it would be all kinds of, oh my God, the youth today are out of control. Well, when it was literally the thing to do in the 1950s, you know? So, I mean, it's insane. So, like, I remember I got pulled over when I was a teenager. I was street racing. And I got pulled over and I literally had the cop sit there and tell me, man, when I was your age, I had a souped up Dodge and I used to go out on the cliffs with my buddies and we'd race each other until the morning time going over 100 miles per hour. And, you know, but I have to give you this ticket. And I'm like, you literally giving me a ticket for some shit you just confessed to me that you were doing when you were my age because you knew how cool it was. You literally just had a flashback moment that gave you such nostalgia that you disclosed the whole story of it to me because it brought you back such fond memories of you and your buddies racing your old Dodges. And here you are giving me a ticket for racing my Honda. You're ticketing me for something you did and just told me you did of your own cognition. Hypocrisy. It's just like, you know, police officers talking about how they used to smoke weed when they were teenagers, but they were locking up teenagers for smoking weed. You know, it's like, come on, man. Like, You want to criminalize, you do it in the name of protecting, but what you're doing is destroying. You want to criminalize behavior that is instinctually ingrained in children. There has to be some sort of defiance. There has to be some sort of risqueness, even as adults. People make mistakes all the time. People do things all the time that are shady. Everybody has a little dark side to them. And what you do is when you allow the youth to exercise it in an innocent and predictable manner, it stops them from exercising it in an unpredictable manner. For instance, I'd rather a group of youth throw eggs in my house than a group of youth shoot bullets at my house. I'd rather them, you know, sneak a hit of a joint than to sneak a hit of some heroin. You know, they need outlets. And what happens is a lot of times when the youth can't get outlets freely in society, they turn to adults who will be free and allow them. Like, for instance, when I was a kid, my grandma, she didn't have many rules, right? But there were some parents who were even cooler than her. Like, my grandma would never let me smoke weed in the house, never let me drink or any of that stuff. That wasn't allowed. But I had friends whose parents, they'd be like, come on, you could drink, you can get high. Guess whose house I was at every weekend? Like, where are you going? Oh, such and such house. Oh, why are you always over there? Oh, no reason. you know, and I'm over there smoking it up, listening to Snoop, drinking it up, part, because their parents would let us. And so because I had restrictions based on myself, there was always somebody willing to allow an outlet for me to come and do something destructive. So here I am getting high and drunk in the mug, passing out on people's couch all weekend, you know. And no, you know, and my grandma, she just trusts that, you know, well, there's adults there, you know, and there's always going to, and today there's creepier and creepier adults. There's adults today that'll let you come have sex at their house. They'll let you shoot up heroin. But these people have ulterior motives. There are a lot of adults. There are a lot of young girls who get caught up in pimping or get pregnant at a young age or end up on hard drugs because their parents are so strict that they shelter and box them in. And you ain't going here. You ain't going there. And they meet one little friend that their parents somehow trust. And that little friend be like, oh, I know a guy. We can go hang out at his house. And he and his ulterior motives is these are two young, sexy little girls. They both about 16. They inexperienced. I'm going to let them get high. I'm going to let them drink. I'm going to let them do what they want to do so they can come on over here. And then eventually he's going to try to, you know, talk them into something a little more risque until they're doing things that they would have never done otherwise. To their will, you know, till they turn their first trick or they snort their first little line or they do something that's bigger than the little stuff that you told you they can't go to. You can't go to the school dance. You know, you banned them from the school dance. So now they at this guy's house doing speed. You know, and this happens all the time. I've personally known females who have gotten raped because their parents were so strict. I knew a girl, she snuck out of the house to go to a party. Her parents had no idea she was at. She had her drink ended up getting drugged at a college party. She was in high school and she woke up with all of her clothes off and it was obvious that she had been taken advantage of. And she told me she was more terrified to tell her parents what happened because of that fact that she snuck out, that she kept it to herself. Now imagine living in a fear like that to where you never can tell your parents the truth about something as traumatizing as that because of how you're afraid they'll react towards you. Like we are, society are hypocrites, man. You know, pornography is one of the biggest industries on the internet. It makes up 2/3 of the internet's revenue, which means that married people, single people, religious people, people who are supposedly holier than thou are all sitting up watching smut. But you got people willing to beat on their kids or ban them from the internet for watching smut. You know, and I understand you don't want your kids watching smut, but if you catch them, don't overreact. If I ever catch my daughters watching porn or something, they already watched it. So at that point, I can't make them unwatch it. It's already in their minds. So now I have to figure out a way to make it make sense and make it a little less appealing than it may have been. You know, like, you know, instead of, hey, what the hell are you doing? I'm taking your computer and over. Instead, I'd be like, all right, look, come here. I want you to Google herpes. I want you to Google HIV images. I want you to Google HPV images. I want you to see what happens when you do this. I want you to physically see the symptoms. I want you to see the because this is what my mother did to me. They didn't have the internet when I was growing up, but she had caught me with a porno magazine. She came home one day with a library book about STDs. And she showed me the inside of the mouth of somebody with AIDS and the whole tongue was white and bumpy. I was just like, oh, my God, man, I was cool. I wasn't trying to have no sex. I was like, man, I'm good. Just seeing the images like made it make sense. Instead of her, give me that magazine. What you doing with that? And she took the time to make it a teaching moment, you know. And as society, I think that's what our youth are missing is teaching. Our youth are depressed, man. They're overstimulated, over-monitored, under-parented. You know, you hand them a tablet, you hand them a phone, you give them TV, you give them Netflix, you give them Hulu. You know, you're scared to let them be out front by themselves because of all the human trafficking and children getting snatched. You're afraid to let them do anything. And then you're constantly yelling at them and screaming at them because they messed the house up or they didn't pick up their clothes. And yeah, you want them to do those things, but you have to understand as kids, we would have probably tore the house up too if we didn't have anything else to do but be in the house. But we were able to get on our bikes and literally burn off energy all day long. So when we came to the house, it was bath time, watch a little Simpsons or whatever you did. For me, I would come home about 6, eat, take a bath or shower. Then I would watch Simpsons, which came on at 7:30, And then after that, I was pretty much ready to go to bed and start the whole day over tomorrow with my buddies. But everybody's routine was different. But if you look at today's youth, there's no outlets. Everything they do, people complain about. I remember when the youth were trying to skate, you had people saying they can't skate on our property. They can't, you know, you have people kicking them out of empty buildings, kicking them out of empty lots where nothing was going on because they didn't want the kids skating there. So it's like, okay, they can't skate. Okay, fair enough. Now they got bike lanes. They can't ride on the sidewalk, only on the bike lane. So now you got them riding in the street, you know, which to me, the sidewalk is a much more suitable place personally, because I rode my bike on the sidewalk and it also I never ran into any human being. I never ran over somebody on the sidewalk on my bike. In fact, it probably helped me to learn to navigate my bike better because of the fact that I had limited space when people were walking. So I learned how to go real slow without falling off and dang near coming to a complete stop and then being able to pick it back up. But now you got bike lanes. Now you're trying to structure everything again. And structure takes away the fun of risque, you know? Like, my daughters came home. They had a dare at school. They were like, my friend said that I should watch a movie called Coraline because it's scary. So I said, all right, turn on Coraline. Let's watch it. And Coraline, it's a kid's movie, but it's freaky as hell. I was like, yo, this is pretty scary. But I was like, it ain't scary. You ain't scared, daddy? Nah, I ain't scared. Man, I'm scared. But anyway, you know, so they come home to me and they tell me what's going on and I don't overreact. I stay cool. I stay level headed. And then I say, okay, they said Coraline. Let's watch Coraline. You know, fair enough. You know, that I'm like, how about this? Tell them about Chucky. Chucky? I never heard of Chucky. Oh, we about to watch some Chucky. My girl's sitting there. We can't do it, daddy. It's too scary. I'm like, oh, so. And then they go to school, tell their friends. My dad said to watch Chucky. Chucky. And they get all the kids traumatized now. And I'm like, that'll teach them. You know what I'm saying? And they're like, yo, your dad's crazy, man. He watches that. Oh, yeah. You know, it's youth. They're always going to want to try something taboo. The best thing you could do is let it remain predictable. I'd much rather it be stuff that I can predict than stuff that I cannot predict. You know, and there's things that you cannot predict once you can lose control of control. it's quite possible to lose control of control. And by that, I mean, you become so controlling to the point where your control becomes an illusion because they only operate the way you want them to in your face. And then as soon as your daughters or your son leave the house, their clothes change, their music changes, their speech changes. And if anything happens to them, they don't come to you because they know that you're just going to come with the lecture and control. It has to be some sort of balance. You've bred little people, not little slaves. They are human beings who are here to have experiences just like you. And your job more than anything is to guide and maneuver them into having the best experiences they can through each experience. You can't save them from everything. I can parent the best I ever parented. I can read every parenting book on the planet and do everything by the book. And my children can still decide to grow up and be strippers. I can put them in private school. I can put them, you know, in military school. I could do everything that you could think of to steer them clear, and they could still grow up and want to be Cardi B, you know. And once they're adults, I can't do anything about that, but I can do my best. And so as opposed to trying to say, oh, my children will be perfect because I do it this way or that way, I realized just like I was a little human being, my children are little human beings, and they have just as much of a right to live a life that suits them or makes them happy as I do. My thing is to just let them know the pros and cons and to guide them as best I can into making the better decisions more often than the worst decisions. Because life is a balance of decisions. I've made some horrible decisions in my life and I made some excellent decisions in my life. Oh boy, I tell you, I've made some real bad decisions and then I've made some great decisions. And so it's a balance of self-governance, which is what my grandma allowed me to learn by giving me almost maximum freedom. As a young boy, I courted quite a few women and I betted quite a few women as a youngster, especially in high school. I mean, I was betting women like dude from 50 Shades of Grey. It was insane. And young girls, I was a young boy, you know, and no R. Kelly stuff. We was all the same age. One thing I learned is it was the girls that always had the strictest parents, like the girls who'd be like, my daddy says I can't talk to boys. Those would be the girls that would, you know, give you fellatio in the movie theater. They want to do that. You'd be like, dang, I didn't even ask her. Oh my God, what are you unzipping my pants? What are you doing? And they'd be like dying to do that to you, and you don't even have to work at it. And it was the girls whose parents had gave them a little extra freedom and be like, nah, I'm not into that. I don't do that. I'm not, and they were a little more reserved, and they learned how to have just a pure good fun time without having to do anything risque, you know? But it was, I noticed it was always the preacher's daughter or the girl whose parents didn't let her talk to boys or the girl whose parents kept her in every sport that would be sleeping with the whole football team and giving fellatio to everybody. And, you know, they were what you would call hoes. And what it was they were doing all of this stuff because they were so sheltered and so locked down. And it was always the girls who had a little more freedom that were cool. They were still virgins. They wasn't really tripping off of sex. They was just trying to be friend, hang out with the boys, and et cetera. And then also notice with the boys too, the boys whose dads were super strict and beat on them all the time. They were always trying to hang with the thugs and the gang members because they wanted to be cool. And the dudes like me who had maximum freedom, I kind of got along with everybody because I can kind of find myself. When you overstructure people in society, you create chaos, man. You create all kinds of trouble. What we're doing it to our youth is just that. This even goes into, let's look at our school system, right? Our school system is so outdated that our youth are literally undereducated by default. You have an industrial era school system still in place from the industrial revolution. So you're talking 19th and 20th century stuff, you know, like late 19th, early 20th century, not new stuff. This is the equivalent of me saying, hey, you want to learn how to work on cars? Yeah. All right. Let me whip out this old Model T Ford, the first car ever made. And you're like, hold up, bro, that ain't gonna teach me how to work on the new stuff that we drive now. No, it ain't, but it, you know, it's a car. Our education system is literally a Model T, and people are riding around in hybrids. You know, people are riding around in hybrids, cars that run off of hydrogen, oxygen, fuel batteries, and all kinds of different stuff. And so we expect our children to advance and excel in a society where they're learning an outdated curriculum and it's boring because it doesn't apply to anything. I learned this in the military. I remember when I went to training, I went to a life skill survival training and they were teaching us about aircraft crash recovery. And the first thing they said before the class even started was, none of this stuff applies to the industry today. And I'm like, why the hell am I in this class? They were literally teaching us stuff from the 1960s and 70s, teaching us about equipment that didn't even exist in the military anymore. But they were just trying to fulfill a requirement of the training. So it didn't matter if the training did anything to enhance my career. I just had to take the training because it was a requirement. It was a check mark. And this is what we do to our youth with education. What good is me learning something that you don't use anymore? What good is me learning Morse code? Or what good is me learning how to use a telephone switchboard when nobody uses that anymore, you know? And so this is what we do to our youth. This is what curriculum is. This is what our education system is. And so what happens is, just like me in that class, our children go to school and they're learning about these boring, dragged out, old, antiquated ideas. Meanwhile, they have smartphones in their hands that can do everything from math to voice recognition to podcasts like this one. And so they become uninspired and understimulated. School becomes antiquated. Then on top of that, while you have a bunch of bored, hungry minds that are getting lulled to sleep with a useless curriculum, all of a sudden they want to throw in stuff that makes things even more confusing. Our children can barely read and write because they're not interested in what's being taught or how it's being taught. But now we're going to teach them about gender studies. They're going to learn about racism and sexism and homophobia and LGBT and trans issues and trans history. And they're like, man, you just go to school and get all kind of scrambled up. You learn stuff that's useless to learn. And then you're taught about social issues that don't really have an impact on your personal life unless you're a part of those groups. And so and what I notice is in the curriculum is they make the lessons about social issues so much more colorful and up to date. Here it is, you know. They got to go learn about the Industrial Revolution style tactics of reading, writing, and arithmetic, where it's all boring and dry, but they make LGBT studies all kinds of exciting. They bring in giant rainbows and dancing people and drag queens, and they give you an iPad, and you can do, you know, online lessons and modules, and there's cool videos and skits, and they make it exciting as hell. And so kids almost look forward to the social issue studies, because those are fun. It's a lot more fun than sitting there, today, class, we're going to be learning about the Industrial Revolution, and, you know, it's just like, man, I remember I was pissed off in school with a teacher named Miss Carr. She told me that in order to pass her class, I had to learn all the presidents and vice presidents verbatim by heart. I had to recite them starting with the first ones all the way to the last ones. I eventually did it, and then she was like, oh, one more thing. You need to know all the states and capitals. Now, if that wasn't the most useless space in my useless space waster of my mind, you know, I have a what good did that do me? There were so many other things that my mind could have grasped and held on to and learned. I could have been learning about science or technology, or I remember I asked my science teacher one time, I had read in an article about Mars, they had something called terraforming, and it actually interested me. I was on the toilet and I was reading a magazine, and I was about 14, and I was like, wow, what's terraforming? And I saw that they were trying to turn Mars into a human-like planet. I went and asked my science teacher, who was actually teaching astronomy that week. I said, what is terraforming? And she was like, we don't need to learn about that right now. We're going to be focused on something else. And I was like, you know, I'm excited about learning something science. And I'm bringing it to my science teacher. And she's teaching us some old dry ass, you know, unnecessary stuff that I don't. It was so dry, I don't even remember it. And I've went on to get two associates, a bachelor's and a master's degree in my life, 4 or 5 certifications, military accolades. I've done all this stuff in my life without remembering what she taught, because it was that useless to me get advancing in society. But terraforming was something that interested me. That might have been the spark, had she ignited it, that had got me onto the path of desiring to know more, giving me a hunger for science, because science is important, because science changes as rapidly as society changes. Science is the one thing that changes in lieu with society. But when you teach outdated science, you're already placing people mentally behind society, if that makes sense. And so the gist of it is that we're doing a grave disjustice and a grave disservice to our youth, because we're criminalizing all of the natural instinctual things that they do to be defiant. Kids are assholes. They can be, but they can also be great. And you have to give them the freedom to be both so they can decide which one is more lucrative for them. Of course, there has to be consequences for negative actions, but and it also has to be a teaching moment. You know, it can't just be you had a fight at school. I'm going to throw you all in jail for assault and y'all going to have a permanent mark on your record. Instead, it has to say, why were you fighting? What made you to fight? What brought about the conflict? How could you have better solved this issue? If you could go back and not fight, what could you have done different? And maybe it'll prevent a future fight. Maybe it'll help them to prevent a future fight. Maybe they'll see somebody about to fight and they'll say, you know, hey, man, y'all don't fight. Don't fight, man. Me and old boy, you know, we learned some techniques on not how to fight. That actually is what happened with me and Eddie. It literally happened that way. He was a bully. He bullied me. I got sick of being bullied. I beat his ass. And then me and him became friends. He stopped bullying other people. And whenever me and him saw other people being bullied, we both stepped up. Hey, man, leave dude alone. What you gonna do? Yo, Eddie, you got this. What y'all wanted? Oh, nah, we good. We good. We ain't gonna do nothing. You know, either I stepped up or he stepped up. And it kept, and it, we actually helped other people from going through what we put each other through. And so this is, you know, this is how you build. So this is why our kids have no social skills. You got kids that just sit in the house all day playing Xbox and PlayStation and watching porno and eating Cheetos. And, you know, either that they're super socially awkward and weird. And you sitting there busting them. Why you don't get out the house and do something? Because you've not allowed them to build any social skills, any conflict resolution skills. You haven't allowed them to deal with rejection or pain or suffering or negativity or hate or physical violence. All of these things are going to be introduced to you at some point in life. And you haven't gave them any of the opportunities they need necessary for them to be able to act out successfully those conflicts so that they can move forward. And black people in particular, we've grown really thin skin. I remember the story of the young black girl. You can see her in it's a historic picture where she was walking and they were screaming at her because she was integrating into high school or middle school, I believe. And they were screaming at this young woman, but she kept a straight face and she kept her pride in her head up. And that's called bearing. That's called fortitude. And it was that fortitude that carried our people through the civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s. And it's that fortitude that allowed us to get to the point we are now. But now we holler like hit dogs anytime any small little thing happens, instead of being grateful for the opportunities that those people who put their own pride aside to give us the ability to have pride, instead of taking advantage of that pride, we lay that pride down and become whiny ass babies and whine about every little thing as if we're constantly victims. And I know we can do better. We have to reevaluate everything because society is a mess right now. It's a mess. The children have no outlets. The adults are crazy. Everybody's sensitive. Everybody's heart's on their sleeve. Everybody's skin is all paper thin. You know, so paper thin, if you wet them, they'll tear. You know, we have to rein in on this. This is not what Americans are. And if we continue on this path, America that we know will cease to exist. The things, the comforts, the freedoms that we've enjoyed, the things that have got us to where we are now, the very ability for me to talk on this smartphone and deliver this message will be taken from us, and it will be rationed by overseers because we lack the ability to oversee and govern ourselves. Self-governance is important. A nation is made up of its people. You took every American person out of this country and every person in general, and you replaced it with Chinese people, America would be ran like China because it's the people that make the nation. And so if we want a strong, powerful, unified nation, we need to become a strong, powerful, unified people. And this starts by letting everybody go through their bumps and bruises and learn the lessons they need to learn. Let the kid put their hand on the stove. Let them realize why they shouldn't do it. Let them fight. Let them figure out conflict resolution. Be there to clean up the mess. Let them have their fight. Stop it before it gets out of hand, but let them have their moment. And then you make it a teaching moment. If you want a helicopter parent and monitor them the way you think that they should be monitored and helicoptered over, then watch from a distance. If I ever see my daughters about to get into a fight, I'm going to step back for a minute and see how they react to the conflict. Now, if they start beating the hell out of each other or weapons start coming out or something, that's when I'm going to step in and say, all right, this needs to stop. It's going too far. But then it's going to come down. I'm going to take the person they're fighting and them, and I'm going to say, now, why were you fighting? What happened? How did this happen? What could you have done differently? Matter of fact, all of y'all, if your parents are okay with it, are going to spend the day with me and we're going to work through this. We're going to make this a teaching moment. And that's all I have for today. There's going to be more to this message. I want to thank you all for listening. It's been a pleasure coming back to Married to Change Radio Revamped. Thank you, Married to Change family. And I hope that this podcast reaches maximum decimation. And I hope that we continue to go forward into the future with prosperity, tons of listeners and people that learn and grow from these messages that we share. Thank you, and you have a wonderful night. This is Aaron with the Golden Mean, and I am out.